Okay, it is 9 o'clock here in Boulder, Colorado, and you are listening to Climb Talk on Radio 1190. My name is Mike Brooks. Dave McAllister is in California on another vacation. Dave, another vacation? Come on, really?
D-Mac.
So we have co-hosts now. We have Corey Flegel and Carol Kochek from the American Access Fund. Carol and Corey,
Alpine,
what's happening?
Club, Mike.
Okay, yeah. So, can you guys maybe introduce our guest tonight on Climb Talk, please?
Well, we got one of our favorites in the studio, Smokey. We like
okay,
when he's here.
Okay, we got... Okay, yep. Go on.
Howdy.
Jason Maurer, local Boulder climber.
Hey, what's up?
Aaron Miller.
What's up, bro?
He's like an ex-Boulder climber. Bellingham, Washington now. He left us, but he's here for the show.
So, Bellingham, Washington, what are you doing there?
I'm going to school. I'm going to be a science teacher. In the meantime, I'm exploring this snow, intense snowpack in the Northwest.
Now, I was talking with Corey Flegel earlier. Now, I understand that he's done some avalanche training. Granted, it's springtime here in Boulder. What can you tell us about spotting avalanches? What should the average person know about safety in the avalanche zone, Corey?
Well, you know, it's pretty dangerous here in our state compared to where Aaron's at in the Northwest. We have a continental snowpack out there. They have a maritime snowpack. Out there it's wetter, it bonds, and they don't have all the crazy layers that we have here. So we have this lurking danger all season long that tends to be a problem here. Our pack is shallow, and there's a lot of metamorphosizing going on within the snowpack. So that's for the skiers, but the climbers as well that are out there getting after it.
Now, we were talking earlier before the show, actually, a couple days ago, and you mentioned that you and Tom Engelbach got a grant to do some North Face in Colorado. Tell us about that, Corey.
Well, you know, if I told you about where the North Face was, I'd have to kill you. You know, it's top secret, and but anyway, kind of rare for Colorado, a North Face that's unclimbed, and there could be a bit of choss, or otherwise known as loose rock, involved in this. Hoping to get it in some frozen-type conditions, but one of the problems is the avalanche danger. There's a steep snow slope up to this face, and being that it's north-facing and shaded, the snow takes longer to transform into a spring and summer solid snowpack, so that's one of the things where you can't jump the gun, and you just have to wait it out and wait for the right moment.
Now, a lot of climbers are also outdoor people who like to hike and etc. How can they spot a potential avalanche?
Well, you can't just spot one unless it's already happened. And no matter how much experience or how much knowledge and courses you've taken, no one is ever 100% certain. And you need to evaluate your gut feeling and also look at the bigger picture of kind of what's going on in the field.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, what's happening around you. Is there snow collapsing and making some sounds under your feet? Or is there some cracks shooting out from your skis or snowshoes?
Mm-hmm.
These sorts of things they won't steer you in the wrong direction if you pay attention to them.
That's a good way of putting it. We also have Carol Kochek from the American Alpine Club, AmericanAlpineClub.org. Carol, what's going on with the American Alpine Club right now?
A lot of things are going on here in the Front Range, Mike. I just took up the position as being the section chair for the Front Range.
Mm-hmm.
On Monday night, we had a really great show at the Patagonia store with Chris Warner.
That was a great show.
Yeah, you were there.
Yeah, you put that together, right?
Yeah, I put that together. I believe we had about 180 people in
mm-hmm.
the store. Chris Warner summited K2. And
crazy.
Yeah, had a really polished show.
Yeah.
Had made a film for NBC about it. We also had Fred Becky at the AMC Center. And there was probably about 100 people who showed up for that. So that was really unique. Mostly AAC members knew about that one. Everyone got to see a slideshow from Fred, and he did a book signing. And we've also had some smaller things, ice climbing days, backcountry ski days when the when the everyone's distracting me here.
Okay, what are you guys doing?
When the summer comes along, I'd like to get some climbing days, some after-work climbing days going with AAC members, meeting each other, getting out and having some fun. Plus, we've hired a regional coordinator for the Colorado Rockies, Jen Fleming, and she's working all over, getting down to Salt Lake, but Utah, Colorado, Wyoming are areas, and we're trying to get a lot of stuff going for everybody to have a good time when they join the AAC and get a really good benefit out of their membership.
Now, let me back up. Let me be the devil's advocate. Now, why should the typical average everyday boulderer join the American Alpine Club?
Well, you asked me this last time I was here.
Yeah.
And you're... Let me see. How can I answer that? We've been working towards that, but a lot of our benefits are things like the rescue insurance, which would not be... which would not be... such a benefit to boulderers.
Mm-hmm.
We are doing a lot of advocacy work, and we are looking at buying Todd Skinner's old place in Waco tanks.
Cool.
So that would be a direct benefit for boulderers to be able to stay down there.
So you say you're looking into it. What's that mean? You guys can't afford it now, or?
No, we've just got to get the right price We're pretty serious about it, but the deal isn't completed yet. We've got to get the right price and work with the owner. We do a lot of advocacy work to keep areas open. We work a lot with the Access Fund, and that should be a big concern for boulderers also.
So you say you work with the Access Fund. How do you guys complement each other in this regard?
Well, we're on the same mission, Mike.
Mm-hmm.
We're working with, like, the Cornerstone grant that has come out for the American Alpine Club. That's a grant of $25,000, which is going to be divided up into small portions. The Boulder Climbing Community got somewhere around $1,900 to do a wag bag type project. We might use that Cornerstone grant might be used towards cleaning up a bouldering area or working with management, land managers to keep areas open for people. So that in that way we're getting things that are smaller and more localized to help local climbing organizations.
We also have legendary filmmaker Chuck Freiberger. He's done such classics as Pure. He's working on a new film. I think he called it Network. He did a film, I think, early on called Synesthesia. Did I pronounce that correctly, Charlie?
That's true, Mike. And the fact that you know the title of that film shows that you've been watching my stuff for way too long.
I've been following your career for some time now. So you're working on a new film, excuse me, called Network. Tell us about it.
Well, first, I just want to express my disappointment that Dave McAllister isn't here tonight. Sad that he couldn't make the time for it.
He's too busy.
Two lies and one truth, Mike. Your show's cool. I'm not buzzed right now. And climbing rules.
Okay. Tell us about Network, dude. Come on, I want to know about your new flood.
The Network, we were already working on it the last time we came up and saw you.
Sure,
last time I was here, I had two Austrians and an Austro-American with me, Anishter, Killian, and Cody. And
great people.
Yeah, so, I mean, these films, like, we work on them for a year or more at a time.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the last time I saw you, it was a while ago. It must have been, like, September or so, or October. But we're still working on the same movie, except at this point we're almost done shooting. But
what are we going to see in your new film?
Well, you know, it's a climbing film, and we don't stray too far from the core. So it's like, it's basically, it's climbing porn. It's killer music. That's not a curse word.
Okay.
It's killer music. It's, it's basically the strongest climbers we can get our hands on.
Mm-hmm.
We try to get them in places where they're going to do stuff that's awesome in whatever their discipline is. You know, mostly it's bouldering, sport, and traditional climbing. And then we link it together with a cool story. So
So the climbing film industry, excuse me, is kind of a little bit saturated, particularly here in Boulder.
No kidding.
How do you keep it fresh?
Well, I mean, for us, like, we try to think in a global context, and you're right, though. I mean, it's crazy. It's crazy. Like, when I first started doing climbing films, like, 10 years ago, it was kind of a magic trick just to be able to shoot something and, like, put it on a screen. You know, it was still that time period where if you could take a picture, that was special, you know, and being able to make a movie was, like, super special. Now it's, you know, video media just washes over us like so much garbage. Yeah. And nobody really pays attention anymore. I mean, it's cruxy. It's cruxy because we're competing against, you know, really talented people that don't even have an aspiration to do it for a living. And so they can, you know, spend weeks, months working on something and put it out and it looks fabulous, you know, because they're paying their bills some other way. So for us, it's a challenge, you know, to try to stay ahead of the wolf pack and make stuff that people will still pay to go out to see and make stuff that people will still buy, you know, off the shelf. But it's cool. It keeps us motivated, and our sponsors keep us, you know, in dough enough to travel around and meet the people we want to meet and do the shooting we need to do.
So do you have a drop date for Network?
Yeah, right now we're looking for, like, October 1st, and we're going to try something kind of new. You know, like, typically in movies, like, you see teasers and trailers coming out beforehand, but for the Network, we're going to try to do a simultaneous worldwide cross-platform release, which means on October 1st, the trailer comes out, the DVDs and Blu-rays hit shelves worldwide, and the downloadable products become available on our website and iTunes, et cetera, et cetera. Okay. So it's a big technical challenge. But
so what is that website?
Our website?
We're listening to radio1190.org.
Yeah. With Mike Brooks. You need to say with Mike
studio.
Brooks for the celebrity
Mike
appeal.
Brooks, Chuck Freiberger, and several other guests.
Okay, you are listening to Climb Talk here on Radio 1190. And in the studio, we have really a mashup show. Carol and Corey, can you maybe introduce our guests one more time, please?
Chuck Freiberger, filmmaker. Aaron Miller, famous fashion statement man of Boulder. Jason Maurer, Mike Brooks, of course. Corey Flegel, and Smokey, who I just met tonight.
From North Boulder.
From North Boulder.
Now, the gentleman from Bellingham.
Hi, that's me. I'm Aaron.
What's happening, Aaron?
Well, I've been removed from Boulder for a few months, and I came back to town to see my friends, and we're going to do a ski hut trip down in the San Juan Mountains near Ridgeway.
So you're going to do that with Core, right, Corey?
Yeah, Corey.
Oh,
and
that's where their North Face route is.
Not telling us,
but not really. We're just going on a ski hut trip for now, too.
Yeah,
the Ridgeway Hut.
Yeah.
Right beside Mount Sneffels.
San Juan Mountains.
Ridgeway itself is not, but the hut would be, yes.
So the name is Ridgeway?
It's up on Ridgeway Peak, I believe.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, Ridgeway Mountain. It's right directly beside Mount Sneffels.
Oh, okay, cool. And so what's the agenda? Is it just a leisure tour, catching springtime in the Rockies,
leisure
or what's
tour.
Up?
Leisure tour, springtime in the Rockies, you know, just a good time with
wet
friends.
Wet t-shirt contest.
Yeah, I'll probably do that with you.
Spring break.
You know, it's good ski touring. It's really good terrain. It's kind of steeper, so we're going to have to be careful, but I think with all this sunny weather, the snowpack is solidifying a bit, and we'll have some good turns, hopefully.
Now, there's a lot of climbers here in Boulder, and we have probably a lot of climbers listening to the Climb Talk radio show on Radio 1190. But, like myself, some of us don't really understand avalanche danger, snowpack. Can you maybe delineate that a little bit and kind of teach us something about avalanches, Core?
Well, there's a whole combination of things to think about. It involves terrain, involves weather, involves the human beings that are on the snow. Snow doesn't care who's walking or skiing or climbing on the snow.
Snow doesn't care.
So
like
you need to. It's like the honey badger, right? It's a lurking threat. And it takes a lot of communication between your fellow adventurers to make sure you have a safe outing. And as Corey said earlier, there's a lot of unknowns. So it's just a really good thing to communicate and be aware of the snowpack, be aware of the weather, be aware of the avalanche forecast. The CAIC, Colorado Avalanche Information Center,
What's
is
that
a
website?
Fantastic resource. I don't know what the website URL would be, but...
You know, Corey?
I think it used to be caic.org, but...
So, gents, what does CAIC mean?
Colorado Avalanche Information Center.
That was easy. And you are listening to Climb Talk here on Radio 1190. My name is Mike Brooks. Dave McAllister, the co-host, is out of town again. And so we have Carol Kochek from the American Alpine Club and Corey Flegel sitting in as our guest co-host. And everyone, thank you for joining us on Climb Talk. Now, Corey, off the top of my head, what is your website again? Tell me about that. And I understand you and Tom Engelbach went down to Patagonia. And you guys, did you freeline? Or tell us about that trip briefly, Corey.
Well, when we went to Patagonia, our goal was to climb Fitzroy. And
oh, cool.
We were able to pull it off. Luckily, we had good companionship team, you know, and good weather for a week straight. So those weather and good companionship is what it takes more than skill, I think, down there overall. And at any rate, we free climbed, we aid climbed, we jumarred, we did everything we could to make it up. But basically it was alpine ice two or so, and a lot of steep snow climbing on the approach. Mm-hmm. And then the rock climbing went at 5.11, and then
cool.
We did some aid climbing in there as well.
How hard was the aid climbing?
Probably A1 or 2, or C1 or 2, you know, mostly. We didn't hammer.
What the C versus A is, isn't it?
The C is just hammerless aid climbing.
Okay.
So why did you go hammerless?
Well, there's no real need to carry this heavy iron pitons and such, and it's just a good style to go clean, you know, as much as you can. Just, you know, leave it like you found it. And, you know, the reason we had to aid mostly is from, we could have been too weak, obviously. But but most of the problem is the cracks are iced up and ice shut sometimes, or okay. Wet and things are slimy. And, mm-hmm. You know, it just makes a big difference on your free climbing skills at that point.
How many pitches?
I believe it was like 35 or 37 pitches, somewhere
nice.
Around there.
So you must have slept on the wall.
Yeah, it took us 4 days from bottom to bottom.
What kind of ledges did you find? Were there any cool ledges, or did you bring a portal ledge?
No portal edge. For the three of us, we had 2 down sleeping bags, 1 bivy sack, and 1 foam pad. And the other foam pad was like a half pad out of the back of a backpack.
Wow.
That's what worked for us. But if a storm came in, we were screwed, and it wasn't going to work, you know, with a bunch of down sleeping bags. We didn't really have shelter, but the forecast looked good, so we went for it. And there's the risk and reward, you know. The faster you are, but it still seemed like we were heavy, and it took us a while.
But this was your first trip to Patagonia, right, Cor?
That's right, yeah, so I feel very lucky that... I was able to get up something people spend a lifetime of weather battles trying to ascend something.
So most people won't go to Patagonia down the tip of South America. How was the experience? Was it as mesmerizing as it seems to be?
I think so, yeah. I mean, I haven't traveled too much around the whole globe, essentially, but I thought it was one of the most beautiful places in the world. And if I had infinite cash funds, I would go back all the time.
Wow,
I mean,
cool.
Not just the climbing, the skiing, the culture, the people, everything is really nice.
Now, we also, in the Radio 1190 studio, we have legendary filmmaker Chuck Freiberger. He's done films such as Pure, Core. He's working on his new film, Network. Do you have any interest of doing something like going down to a place like Patagonia and filming down there, Charlie?
Yeah, I mean, I went to Patagonia just recently. The weather was heinous.
Were you working?
They were closed, though. I was going to get a new jacket. But because my studio is just like a few blocks from Patagonia, and I mean the weather had me like totally closed in. We waited for a window, and you know the window came in. It looked like we had a chance at going down and getting our jacket, and so we left our you know our base camp, and then we headed over there. Took the mall shuttle for a while. You know, we were within view of Patagonia, and then we discovered that we were just a little too slow in our approach, and they closed. That was our last.
And
that was
so
our last attempt.
You had to bivouac at Market Street Station.
Yeah, but I agree. I mean, if I had infinite cash funds, I would be at Patagonia right
now.
It's
really beautiful.
The way they have the jackets set up, and the salespeople are so friendly.
The you know? Models in the Patagonia. Window is really striking. It's really beautiful storefront.
It's amazing. I mean, I totally hear people talk about Patagonia, and I'm like, I wish I was there right now. You know?
Trying on a
new
jacket.
The brochures, the... Ah, don't even get me started.
Okay, I won't.
Now, Cor and Carol, we were talking earlier about the American Alpine Club's International Climbers Meet at Yosemite. Can we address that again? Tell us about that. How'd that go? How'd you get that gig, Carol?
Well, how did I get that gig? I was sitting in my little cube, and I heard my boss sort of arguing with someone else who ran the show about this and that. And I walked into his office a few minutes later and said, "I'll do it. I'll go down to Yosemite and run the International Climbers Meet and get paid to go to Yosemite."
Okay, yeah,
oh, okay. So that's sort of how I started that. I've ran that show for 2 years. And last year, Corey was one of the host climbers, so he came along too. But the International Climbers Meet was started by Jim Donini about 4 years ago.
Oh, I didn't
and
know
he
that.
Wanted to have something similar to what a lot of the Euros do, because a lot of the Europeans have international climbers meets. So for 2 years, it was in Indian Creek, and it was only internationals. And then the next year was in Yosemite. It was only internationals, but last year we wanted to make it more of a member benefit. So now members can apply to come to the meet, and it's in Yosemite. Last year it was about half U.S. AAC members and half internationals, and it's really awesome because we get the Yellow Pines Campground, which is the secluded campground. It's away from Camp 4, the pines, everything, volunteer campground. We have a caterer, so you get three meals a day. You even get a brown bag lunch, so you go out climbing all day, you come back, you get chicken cordon bleu for dinner, whatever, no cooking involved. And we also have host climbers, some of which are Valley locals, to follow around. I got to do the free blast last year on El Cap, which was pretty awesome with one local dude. So it's a great time, and keep your eye out. I'm going to be putting it up on the website fairly soon. We're going to start looking for the internationals. We've already got dates set for this year's meet in Yosemite again in October. Maybe Corey has a little more to add, because he was there last year also as a host climber.
Well, let me ask you this. Who's going to be the chef?
We have BB's Catering, and every year they get a little better. There are two women that run a catering outfit from Merced, and they come up and they have a catering truck that they leave right there on site.
Cool.
Yeah, so they're there early in the morning making us breakfast, and then you just pick up your little brown bag lunch, take it out with you during the day, and come on back for dinner. It's pretty sweet.
So let me ask the obvious. Can anyone sign up to go on this international meet?
To be an AAC member.
You have to be a member. And
yes.
So what is the price on that? Is it an annual fee?
An adult fee for a year of membership in the club is $75.
That's not bad.
No, a junior is 40, and the age for that, I believe, is it 28 and under. So the $40 deal is killer. And then we also have couples, which is $125, and senior, I don't know what the age is for senior, but that's $50. And besides being able to sign up for things like the International Climbers Meet, there's a whole lot of other benefits to it also. But you do have to be a member, you have to apply, but, you know, I think there were 30 participants last year, and like I said, there were about half internationals, half people from all over the U.S., although there were quite a few people from the Boulder area there.
Now, the American Alpine Club does a lot for the climbing community, but maybe I think I can safely say maybe the boulderers or maybe even the sport climbers could be a little bit blasé about joining the American Alpine Club. What can you say to jumpstart these people to sign up?
You keep hitting me with this question, Mike, every time. You gotta give me a little more lead time. So I hear Corey's got something to say.
Okay, well, let's hear it, Corey.
I think, it's a good organization. There's a lot going on. There's front range events, as well as in the other areas of the country. There's local events where, maybe you're just getting together on a social event and drinking some beer at our local bar, the Dark Horse, or it could be climbing at the Spot Gym. A day of ice climbing, a day of skiing you can sign up for just to get the community together. The Yosemite thing, it's a great value. Like, I think it was like just over $400. You get transportation to and from the valley. You get free camping for, it was 8 or 9 days. You don't have to deal with Camp 4 and wait in line for hours to get a campsite and have it be crowded. Not that that's a bad thing, but it's nice to have this all taken care of. 3 catered meals a day, host climbers that know the valley, boulderers. They're going into more remote places now to find these new boulder problems where they have to walk a long ways. Maybe it's in the high country, the alpine terrain. Well, you get hurt. Why not have some rescue insurance? It's another good benefit.
You know, one thing that American Alpine Club does that hasn't been talked about yet is a lot of community service. And sport climbers and boulderers use the public land just like every other trad climber or ice climber or mountaineer. And there's all kinds of trail service work and national park partnerships that the AAC mediates for members and for all the public land users, which includes boulderers and sport climbers.
And we do have a night coming up, a free night at the Spot Gym for all AAC members.
What? Free night? When is that?
I'm sorry, Mike, you can't come. You're not an AAC member.
So you like to say.
Burn.
I'm not even going to tell you what night it is.
Okay. Hold on. We got Chuck Freiberger here in the Radio 1190 studio.
Mike.
On Climb Talk. Now,
tell us some stories about the old days, Mike.
Well, let's get to that a little bit later. Let me ask you something. Are you an AAC member?
I have been for some years, yeah.
I'm not buying that. So you are now?
Although I have to admit, I don't know if I am currently, to be honest, but I think maybe 7 of the last 8 years. Yeah.
Oh, that's a weak excuse.
But the rescue insurance, I'm sure that, like, the first time you are bouldering in Upper Chaos and you sprain your ankle, I'm sure it pays for itself.
Or chip a nail.
I mean, yeah, like, when you're bouldering, there's different kinds of disasters, you know? Like, what if you get into a bad mood, or what if somebody says something mean to you? You know, for an alpinist, it's like you might fall into a crevasse. Well, for a boulderer, it's like, you know, what if the breeze isn't blowing the right way or the temps aren't very good? Well, you call the AAC, they're going to get you fixed up and things are going to be just great.
Right on, Chuck.
Or if your ensemble clashes.
Exactly. If your ensemble is clashing, the AAC is going to send a chopper up there. They're going to get you squared away.
That's great.
If you have a clashing ensemble. Mike Brooks, did you know that your name is in the El Dorado Canyon guidebook?
I've seen it in there a couple
times. Tell us about the old days.
Give me a startup though.
All right, I'll get you going. Mike, my name is Mike Brooks, and in 1979, it was the craziest year ever because that's when this happened.
I'll bore our listeners. Back in those old days, honestly, I didn't climb in climbing shoes, and I didn't wear a harness, and did a lot of soloing. Although Climb Talk does not recommend and/or encourage soloing. Soloing is dangerous. Please seek professional training if you're going to do any climbing, and we do not recommend soloing. But get back to what you were talking about. It was a different time. I was thinking about that a little bit earlier. The sky was a little bluer. It was just a different time.
The crags were less crowded.
It was so different. It was a different mindset back in those days. climbers were outcasts. They were rejects from society. They didn't fit in. Now climbing is mainstream for the most part.
Mike, you back know, in the old days, what kind of profit potential did you see in like a killer FA? Like, did you do it for the media or for your sponsorship incentives?
No. I used to climb with Jim Stuberg and Carl Harrison and a couple other people, and our motivation was it was undone, it was a challenge. Anything done was not a challenge. It was because at the time we were training as hard as most people were, and so any line that had already been done, not a challenge at all. Find something that hasn't been done. That's a challenge.
You're my hero.
So you keep saying, and you are.
I think I might be your biggest fan.
No, I think Smokey is. And you are listening to Climb Talk here on Radio 1190, and it's a really beautiful day here tonight in Boulder, Colorado. And do that radio, that station.
Hey, let's go do Works Up. Works Up's my favorite
Smokey,
climb.
Smokey, do that station ID
Works
for
Up.
Me.
We're listening to Radio 1190, radio1190.org.
And thank you so much. And Carol and Cor, please tell our listeners again who we have in the Radio 1190 studio.
In the studio, the godfather of Climb Talk, Michael Brooks. By my side, Carol Kochek, famous filmmaker, Chuck Freiberger, ex-Boulderite, Aaron Miller, fashion star extraordinaire.
What's up, bro?
Jason Maurer, climbing star extraordinaire, and Smokey.
So, Jason, I ran into you in El Dorado last weekend. You guys were climbing on the West Ridge. What do you got slated for this week, Jason?
I don't know, maybe some cragging with some friends, probably go back to Eldo or something.
Nice.
Seems like the temps are getting pretty good right now.
Do you have anything picked out? You know the ticks are out.
Tell us about the West End.
The West Ridge?
The West Ridge.
West Ridge is pretty good. A lot of, you know, single-pitch cragging. Mm-hmm. You can get some good multi-pitch stuff up toward the top, mm-hmm. you know, near Rincon. That's been on my list for a while to get up and do that whole route.
Pony Express. On your list?
Yeah, that's been on the list too.
Cool.
This is kind of a good season for Eldo, I think, before it gets too hot.
Yeah, El Dorado climbing can be pretty brutal in the summer. I think it's probably best in the fall and spring. I'm sure all my guests in the studio can concur with that.
I concur.
Now, Chuck Freiberger, and I like to call him Charlie, you made a film called Synesthesia.
Yeah.
What is that?
How old is it?
I think that was from like 2002, Mike. I mean, you're reaching way back.
What was your motivation?
Well, that was basically a student film. I mean, at the time, I had no idea what was going on. So I, you know, synesthesia is like a psychological thing where your senses get crosswired, sort of. So if your eyes see the color red, it shows up as something else. Like, you know, every time your eyes saw the color red, you would hear the sound of insects or you would feel pins and needles or something. And if you have synesthesia, it's not like you're imagining it. It's like it actually happens.
So it's organic in nature.
Yeah, it's basically, I think it just happens like like electricity in your brain just kind of goes the wrong way. So your senses get goofed up. But some people do have it. And in fact, I think a lot of people have it to a certain extent.
I have it.
You know,
I can hear the sun.
That's cool. I think you might have it.
Me too, but only on certain drugs.
Yeah. But it's not when you're high. It's like all the time.
Like an autoimmune disorder.
Yeah. Yeah, but musicians have it, I think. A lot of artists and creative types do.
Really?
Yeah, and it's cool. But I made a film about it where some guy suddenly has it and he doesn't know exactly what it is, but he turns it into a creative expression. And so, I thought it was cool to make that film because it involved a lot of sound. And
how did you find him?
Well, he's fictional. I wrote the film. It's a piece of fiction. So it's based on real, you know, circumstances. But, he's an actor that we invented.
Very nice.
Yeah. And the film, it didn't win any awards, I'm sad to say, but it was part of my learning curve, you know.
And that was Chuck Freiberger. Chuck is a renowned filmmaker. He's made films such as Pure, Core. He's working on Network. What's next after Network, Charlie?
I don't know. I'm thinking about a movie called I Can Hear the Sun. the life and times of Mike Brooks.
That was funny. Okay, we
Chuck,
have nine.
Can I ask you a question?
Ahead, Carol,
are your films really popular in Europe?
Yes, we sell about half of our stuff to like North America, mostly the U.S., and then half of our stuff goes abroad. DVDs and Blu-rays and our downloaded products. And my sponsors are about 50-50. Like my longest ongoing sponsor is La Sportiva, which is Italian, of course. My current, the big sponsor behind the current film is Red Bull, which is an Austrian company, and Edelrid, which is a German company, and then Mammut, which is Swiss. And in fact, we don't have any sponsors for my current film that are headquartered in America.
What do you attribute that to, Charlie?
That's hard. The viewership. Hard to say.
Do you think more Europeans watch the films, or do you think more Americans watch the films, or is it maybe like average?
The question was, do more Americans watch climbing films or Europeans? I could try to give you a scientific answer. Like I could look on our trailer, you know, on our Vimeo page, and I could try to track down the countries where people are watching the trailer, because it'll let you see that. I don't have those stats right in front of me, actually, but I think it's about half and half. And I don't know, it varies from country to country in Europe. Like in America, we don't have an extreme hero mentality, you know, like most American climbers are like, ooh, you know, Chris Sharma, like he's rad, you know, but we're not like Chris Sharma is my hero. But in parts of Italy, especially like in Europe, there's a few countries, but Italy in particular, somebody like Adam Ondra goes there and he is a hero. Like I was filming Adam Ondra for this year's Real Rock Tour in Italy. And I kid you not, like, literally, people came out to the crag with like a picnic basket and a picnic blanket, and they didn't climb. They just watched Adam climb. And I've never seen that happen in America, where spectators go to a climbing area just to watch a celebrity climb.
With a picnic basket.
With a picnic basket and a bottle of wine and, like, no intent to go climbing. They didn't even bring climbing shoes or chalk.
It's more part of the culture. It goes back farther in Europe than it does in the United States, you know? It's more a family thing. The school kids go out. Like Fontainebleau, for instance, the school kids go out to Fontainebleau and Boulder.
And it's part of the pop culture, too.
Yeah,
I mean,
it's different there.
If the Austrian climbers win a competition, they'll be on the front page of the newspaper. You know, in America, we do have more of a culture that's geared towards, like, celebrity, where Chris Sharma may not be your hero, but you will go get a poster signed by him. Or if he's somewhere, you do take notice and you do follow his moves, you know, around. So it's kind of interesting to track, you know. And then there's other countries where the climbing elite are sort of role models and just leaders, like social leaders, kind of leaders of the pack or whatever.
Would it be akin to, let's say, a basketball star here or a football star, that sort of mentality? Because it definitely people go watch football games. They don't play football, but, you know, or basketball or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely like in Europe, I think a lot of the best climbers, they are built up, you know, by the media and just by the culture to be sort of superhuman. Whereas in America, our climbers are sort of, you know, we come from a tradition of being outcasts, rebels, and no do-goodniks, you know, like no-goodniks or whatever. But in Europe, they're like pro athletes. So, you know, you wouldn't like run up to Michael Jordan and give him a high five or be like, dude, you totally blew that free throw. And in Italy, when I was hanging out and filming Adam Ondra, like he would goof up, you know, on a boulder problem. And I would like stop the camera and go up and be like, well, you screwed that one up. You know, how long are you going to rest? 10 minutes? And, you know, I would look around and everybody was like, you can't say that. And I was like, but Adam is like, that's cool, you know. He hates just being stared at. But then, you know, other people, they wouldn't even, like, make eye contact with him or approach him unless maybe a kid ran up to, like, get an autograph in between burns. Very surreal.
That was Charlie Chuck Freiberger talking about filming Adam Ondra. What was it like working with Adam? Charlie?
Yeah, he's super cool. He's a professional and super smart. He's an amazing technical climber, kind of like kind of like in a Dave Graham kind of style, like really spidery, really flexible.
Mm-hmm.
He uses his finger strength and his flexibility and his reach to his advantage. You know, I don't like if you're crashed on the side of the highway and, you know, there's a car pinning your leg to the ground, I don't think Adam Andra is the guy that is going to lift the car off your leg. You know, like, in other words, like, he's not that breed of climber that could be a gold medal gymnast. You know, there are climbers that are big and strong and they could be gold medal gymnasts. Adam Andra.
On that note, what do you think about climbing being entered into the Olympics? Did that make sense?
Yeah. With climbing being an Olympic sport.
Yeah. How do you feel about that?
To me, it seems like a natural progression for the more European model, where the kids are brought up through youth climbing teams, fostered by government-sponsored coaches, sent around the world, you know, paid for by the Climbing Federation with coaches and sponsors. And then, you know, a lot of the people like Killian Fischhuber, for instance, they are not coming from the American tradition of being a vagabond in a camper. You know, he's been brought up from a very young age through the Austrian Federation, and he's trained by the Austrian coaches, and he's the pride of the Austrian climbing culture. And totally, like, that's more like a normal system. A lot of Americans have a hard time understanding it because they're like, what? You know, is some dude going to pop out of a trailer with a cloud of marijuana smoke following behind him and step on top of a podium? I don't think so, but that's not the way.
So do any of us imagine an American climbing scene that resembles anything like this?
Well, could that possibly happen here?
I mean, could that happen?
In Boulder, you get flashes of things that are approaching it, but in America, I haven't seen anything like a proper competition in Europe. You know, in America, you go to, like, the Spot or Movement for a big competition.
Or Boulder Rock Club.
Boulder Rock Club, or, play, you know, you go to, or the Teva Mountain Games, for instance. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of the closest that we have, is something like the World Cup at Movement that occurred, or the Teva Mountain Games up in Vail.
Those are both good shows.
You see, like dozens and dozens of really, really talented people who train hard and compete like heck wearing their national flag, you know, and they compete like they have their national flag on their back. And that's really, it's really cool to see. But if you go to a place like Arco, Italy, during the World Championships, it's like that times 10.
Wow.
Interesting.
What's your take on all that, Carol?
I don't know. I think it's just a different attitude over in Europe. As I was saying, I think they view climbing as more like we would view basketball stars or something. I mean, if you're going to play pro basketball, you don't roll out of some trailer. You probably have coaches. I mean, I actually knew some people who are on the U.S. ski team, and they started in coach ski environment when they were 4 or 5 years old.
Wow.
And were brought up through the ranks. But that could be a part of climbing here, but for me personally, that's not what I want to do. The thing I love about climbing in the U.S. is you can meet the superstars of U.S. climbing and you know, roll out of a smoke-filled van with them or crash in the dirt with them or whatever, and that's a fantastic part about U.S. climbing. I mean, I think that's one of the best things, and we have such a giant wilderness across the U.S. Europe, I've been to Europe a couple times, and it seems very crowded to me. I can just blow over to some fantastic climbing area and camp out in the dirt and run into, you know, Dave Graham or something, and, oh, hey, dude, what's going on? You know, that's what I think the beauty of the American climbing scene is, and I'd really hate to see that go away, and I don't think it will. That's sort of the roots of the American climbing scene,
and
really.
And it fits with our landscape, too.
Yeah.
You know, we've got a landscape that's real conducive to getting in a camp, and plus a culture that's conducive to, like, the freedom of the open road, getting in a camper, you know, doing your own thing and experiencing this vast wilderness. If you're coming from a city that is in a valley in Europe, then that's not probably going to be your culture.
Yeah, I don't think they've grown up like that. I mean, the climbers are sort of the Jack Kerouacs of athletics.
Yeah,
you know.
And American climbing, even though we don't have, like, that competition culture, the few climbers who have really tried to achieve from America, they've been met with a lot of luck, you know, like Timmy Fairfield, I think, was the first American to win a World Cup competition.
He was?
Uh-huh.
What year was that?
That would have been maybe in the late 90s or so.
Is he still climbing?
Yeah. Yeah, still climbing pretty well.
Have you done any footage with him?
Negative. Negative.
Do you have any plans on doing any?
It's possible. Possible. Ethically, he's a little bit weird because he does do a lot of chipping and manufacturing. So he's pretty old school in that way. And
let's back up.
That's old school.
You just said on live radio that Timmy Fairfield chips.
Yeah, that's pretty well known, Mike. I'm not saying that it's bad. I didn't make a value judgment. All I said was that he puts metal on rock to, make climbing holds, just like many people did in the 80s. It's just that everybody else stopped doing it.
That's interesting. Anyone want to comment on that?
I don't know who Timmy Fairfield is.
He's the first American to ever win a World Cup competition.
Now I know that Timmy Fairfield is the first American to ever win a World
Mexico.
Cup.
He's paid his dues.
And a nice guy. Yeah. And a super talented climber.
What about you, Cor? What's your thoughts on that? Do you chip? Did you chip him down in Fitzroy?
No, I don't chip. And
you said C1.
C1, yeah,
chip
clean
one.
Aid.
Chip.
I was chip chip one.
What I was really hoping was that the cam didn't chip out of the crack and send me sailing. Chipping, I don't really agree with it. But, it makes for some really good routes at the sport park to dry tool on, or something with ice tool since it's already destroyed.
So you mentioned dry tooling. And so that means taking an ice axe and sticking it on the rock, kind of basically
among
digging a hole in the rock. Kind of destructive. Anyone want to tackle that concept?
It is destructive. It will
way make, destructive.
It
dude.
Will it will make pock marks in the rock eventually, and you don't really want to do that on established free climbing routes. It will be a bit of a faux pas and dry tooling. Jim Donati described it as what a man does when he doesn't have a date.
Well, let's don't go there, but thank you for the concept. And you are listening to Climb Talk here on Radio 1190. My name is Mike Brooks. We have Corey Flegel and Carol Kochek from the American Alpine Club as guest co-host because Dave McAllister is on another vacation. Dave, what's up with that?
Hey, Chuck, can I ask you something else?
Go ahead.
Mike? Yes, ma'am.
It's something we were talking about a little bit out there. Do you think there'll come a time when someone might die while you're filming them? Or somebody's filming somebody? Because I'm watching these things going, whoa, that's really on the edge. And is at some point somebody's just doing some solo or wingsuit thing and they just crash and burn on film?
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Like we were talking about this just outside of the studio, and the closest I think I've ever come to filming somebody die is last year when I was filming for the I was filming for the Real Rock Tour. Mm-hmm. And I worked on this film called Sketchy Andy, which was about the Highliner in Moab. And there's a shot in the film of him doing a gainer off of a cliff outside Moab.
So what's a gainer?
Gainer, that's where you run off the cliff forwards, but then you do a backflip. So you run off the cliff forwards, your feet come over your head, you continue rotating, and then you throw the chute. But he flipped until his feet were above his head, and he threw his chute early. Mm-hmm. And then he threw his chute like in a downward direction.
Wow.
And then fell like onto the pilot chute.
That doesn't
this
work.
Is a bad situation.
Yeah.
And in midair he had to like flail his arms around so that he was clear of his chute and that the pilot chute could then fill with air and then pull the main chute out. And he survived, but for a minute there when I saw his arms flailing around, I was like I'm gonna film a dude dying now.
So you've done a lot of climbing, but was that like the scariest moment of your life?
Well, I've also filmed like Kevin Jorgensen doing really sketchy free soloing and highball bouldering, stuff where he would have died or been seriously hurt if he fell. I've done my fair share of highballs and free solos, so
sure
I kind of know what those guys are experiencing, and most of the time they are in good enough control. Someone like Kevin is pretty much in control enough that it's not, if he dies, it's not going to be because of anything he did. It's going to be some freak, bird strike or something that he has no idea how to control.
You get to read people's body language if you know them.
But yeah, I mean, it is like there's pressure to always, you know, every year you got to notch up the awesomeness factor and, you know, the
what
root of it all.
What creates that pressure? What creates that pressure?
The root of it all is the audience's vicarious desire to see spectacular things. That leads them to pay the media, me, to see my footage. And what I offer to the crazy people is exposure and money and fame and recognition. And the sponsors, you know, like that have their logo plastered on these dudes, they want them to be in the media. So, you know, it's the type of dance where no one person is, like, quote-unquote, to blame. Everybody's kind of complicit in it, and it's mutually beneficial most of the time.
But what would happen if someone died? Would there be any outcry, or would it just be like, hey, go on, business as usual, this is the way that
do things? Like Dan Osman, you know, guys like that, like he made his whole public image and his whole career by doing ridiculous stunts on camera. It's hard to say if he would do those crazy stunts when the camera was not rolling, although often these guys, they are so hardcore that they would do it even if the camera was not rolling. And that's the trick, is like you have to ask the people, are you going to do this even if I don't film? And if the answer is yes, then you can kind of proceed with filming with somewhat of a clear conscience. But, you know, these days, like, alpine climbers are heading up gnarly faces, and they're carrying little cameras with them, and they would probably be lying if they said that their, you know, award-winning film was not factoring in their mind when they headed off on this adventure.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and like a lot of good climbers who were into filming have died, and you could maybe for a minute think like, man, I wonder if it was the pressure of, like, putting together that sick reel for the next adventure film festival that made these dudes go over the edge, you know? It's an interesting balance between media and pressure and expectations. I don't have the solution. If you come up with it, let me know.
You're listening to Radio 1190, radio1190.org at KVCU.
Boulder. And this is Climb Talk. It's 9:51 here in Boulder, Colorado. It's really a beautiful evening out. It's perfect temperature. And Climb Talk wants to remind people to climb safely this weekend. So we have 8 minutes left here on the Climb Talk radio show. Where should we go from here, guests?
Tell us some stories, Mike.
Okay, I'll close this out with this story, but we still have a couple more minutes. Charlie?
All right.
Why don't you maybe open up, maybe kind of get things rolling? I mean, you're so loquacious.
Ambidextrous?
Loquacious.
Yeah, well, what other... I mean, this is a radio show. We should talk about hot-button issues.
Okay.
Who was the first person to coin the term Boulder Bubble? I'd like to find that out.
Remember the
I don't know. That's been a long time.
Smokey raised his hand.
The Boulder Bubble.
That was at the Boulder Res.
Oh, yeah.
3 years ago. That was nice. Remember the Bubble...
The Bubble Boy.
The Bubble Boy?
No, don't you mean the kid whose, like, parents sent him off in the weather balloon? Balloon Boy. I don't think that had to do with the Boulder Bubble.
Let's just stay on track. And this is Climb Talk on Radio 1190. My name is Mike Brooks. We have co-host guest Corey Flegel and Carol Kochek from the American Alpine Club. Carol, what else can you tell us about the American Alpine Club? What can you tell me to make me sign up?
Well, I already told you. I'm not letting you in the spot. You're not getting invited to our spot party.
Okay, that's not going to work.
How about the journal or the accident report?
Well, I don't know if Mike would like those things or not. We do.
I read.
You read?
Sure.
Wow, cool. Well, we do have the American Alpine Journal.
How about the library?
The library is pretty awesome. The library has 3,000 guidebooks, and you can check them out. You don't have to go to the library. You just check them out online.
And you have to be a member.
Yes, and we'll mail you the guidebook, and then you mail it back. So if you're going somewhere,
that's
you can get the...
That's pretty incredible.
Yeah, so right there, you can... A couple guidebook checks out will save you $75 right there.
So people can go online and sign up online?
Yes.
Cool.
How about the new search engine that allows you to search every American Alpine Club journal back from like 1920?
Wow, who did that coding?
We have someone who's digitizing a lot of the library. We have a person working down there who's getting all that online. So say you're going to go to Patagonia or one of these places.
It's just down the street.
Well, you can go online and you can...
Or
yeah,
they
that's
have an
right.
awesome online store.
Yeah, that's right.
Discounts.
Okay, that awesome... You know, whatever.
So if you're saying...
Form-fitting quilting. It's awesome jacket.
If I wanted to take a once-in-a-lifetime trip to go bouldering in Fontainebleau, France, I could call and have the Fontainebleau guidebook delivered to my house and take it with me and then return it. Is that right, Carol?
Yeah, you wouldn't have to call. You just... look up on the internet, put in Fontainebleau, whatever books we have on Fontainebleau would come up. Then you can order them, and they will be mailed to you. You could take them over to France, bring them back, and look at Corey's site, and just mail them back to the library. You don't even have to go down there.
That'll work. Okay, we got 5 minutes left here on the Climb Talk radio show on Radio 1190. Let's spice it up.
Should we do the rest of the show in Spanish?
Yeah.
Go ahead. Spice it up, Charlie. We got 5 more minutes left. Let's get provocative.
I actually had an amazing Mexican dish tonight.
Where at?
It made me just want to speak Spanish. West Colfax in Denver. It's
you spend
a city.
Lot of time on Colfax.
If Boulder is in the middle of the map, which of course it is, Denver's the city to the bottom right.
Okay, I'm with you. Go ahead.
It's where I live and work.
I thought your shop was in Golden.
I live in Golden. I was born in Golden.
I didn't know that. So can people
Golden.
Come into your shop and maybe browse?
Yeah, I mean, it's not really a shop like a retail shop. It's a studio. But people are welcome to swing by. We're real proud of it. It's cool. We got our cameras there and stuff. It's
now, you have a... we're talking with Chuck Freiberger. You have a special camera, the big red, the
yeah.
red one. What's it called?
We got a new camera just recently called the Red Epic.
Now, what does that mean?
It's a 5K motion that
so
shoots
sick.
300 frames per second.
Then why do you need so many frames per second, Charlie?
Dude, because you need that many frames per second, Mike.
Climbers dyno nowadays.
Okay,
yeah.
Yeah, they've been doing that for some time.
Yeah, I mean, you can ask a climber to dyno in slow motion, but they're going to get real moody, so it's easier if you just shoot it in slow motion.
Dynoing to a knee bar is very complicated, Mike.
You have no idea.
Now, is that possible?
But our new camera is sick. I don't know. People get it and they freak out. For me, it's like it's a bomb camera. It's awesome.
So,
takes nice pictures. It's lighter than the old one, which is nice, so my back doesn't have to break every time I go film something.
So do you do the filming yourself, or do you have your underlings do that?
I have a talented team of underlings. I have Nelson Carianis, who you've met before. He's been working for me now for a bunch of years. And then just recently, Kyle Burkampas, who he was at Sender Films for a while, and now he works for me.
How can he jump ship from Sender, if I can ask?
I wouldn't say jump ship.
You don't have to.
You can say it. he just decided it was time to make a move.
Really?
I think he did fantastic work at Sender. Mm. And for me, he's going to be directing some more commercial stuff and helping us out with climbing cinematography. So between me, Kyle, and Nelson, we've got a really good team. And then this guy named Ben that we hired also, who's been going out on our climbing shoots.
So, Chuck Freiberger, you've done commercials for some time. Can anyone see your complete catalog somewhere?
I don't own my complete catalog. I mean, a lot of the stuff I've shot belongs to other people. Like, for instance, when I shoot for Dosage 5, that belongs to Big Up Productions. When I shoot for The Real Rock Tour, that belongs to Sender Films. So I don't actually own the rights to every frame that I've shot.
Let me ask a technical question. What was the contract like that you had to sign or potentially have to sign for filming for these people?
For those guys, it's not a very long contract. It's a phone conversation and a handshake most
really?
Of the time. Because I've known these guys for a long time.
Sure, Peter Mortimer and...
Pete Mortimer and Josh Lowell.
Sure.
They're good guys, and we work together a lot, you know, and we bounce ideas off each other. And You know, we try to work together. When it looks like we're going to be competing on something, we communicate and try to stay off of each other's toes.
That's
and try to respect each other's turf. And there's plenty of room, so we try to work towards, like, you know, common, like, we believe that sort of a high tide is going to float all the boats. So if we make climbing video genre, like, good and plentiful, then all of our boats will float on that.
Very
and so
well
we don't
put.
Try to shoot each other down.
And that
you know, if it looks
down.
Like we're headed towards the same spot, we communicate and make a course adjustment so we don't run into each other.
Very cool.
Yeah.
We have 1 minute left here in the Climb Talk radio show on Radio 1190. Do you want to do that radio, the station ID again, Smokey?
Thanks to all our guests for showing up tonight. It's been a nice show. You're listening to Radio 1190, KVCU, radio1190.org.
Cool. We got 1 minute now, Carol.
Should we just bash on Dave McAllister?
Go ahead. Yeah, Dave.
Why didn't he call in?
First off, he didn't even call in. Didn't tell me that he wasn't going to be here. He knows that he's like one of my friends. He totally ditched us.
Man, you're like a date that got stood up.
Well, you know,
that's
me and
the way
Dave,
you're talking.
Me
dude.
And Dave have kind of a bromance.
Listen,
it's all that. That's all. I hope he listens to this and feels like he, you know, like his feelings were hurt as much as mine were.
Carol and Cor, tell our listeners who our guests were one more time while I set up overnight ambient. I'm pretty sure tonight is. Go ahead.
The grandfather of Climb Talk Radio, Michael Brooks. Carol Kochek, American Alpine Club. Chuck Freiberger, extreme filmmaker. Aaron Miller,
extreme dresser.
Jason Maurer, local climber extraordinaire.
Smokey! And that was Climb Talk. Thanks for listening.